Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hey everybody, welcome to From Complex to Queens. I am Steve Saipa, and I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Levin. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Good.
Back in my ancestral New Jersey haunts.
All right,
the Garden State welcomes you, Lucas.
Yeah, welcomes me back as I sit at the desk I did all my high school work at, you know? It's feels a little strange.
Only good grades, I'm sure.
I did get a 50, and I mean a literal 50, in French for a semester after I'd gotten into college because I just stopped caring. So that grade was...
Senioritis.
Oh, yes. Senioritis. That grade wasn't so great.
No. Well, you know what is great? Christmas. And this week we're going to have a promote, extend, trade themed with Christmas.
Okay.
Just very simple, promote, extend, trade of all of the various Christmas carols available.
Trade all of them.
Wow. I'm extending all of them because I love Christmas music.
I'm going to extend Feliz Navidad and trade everything else.
Wow.
Okay, I can think about this a little bit.
Feliz Navidad is a bop, just so we're all clear.
Hard disagree. I will extend Drummer Boy, which I know is very seemingly random, but I've always loved that song. Mm-hmm. I'll promote... Crap. Can I just do like that one Trans-Siberian Orchestra song that everyone knows that gets played too much, but I still really like deep down, and I don't know the name of it.
Oh, no, that one, of course.
Everyone knows the song I'm talking about.
Unless yeah, that song sung by that guy.
Uh-huh, that's exactly it.
Who knows?
There are no lyrics in that song, actually, so sung by no one. I'll promote that one, and then, let's just trade Jingle Bells, please.
I'm trying to remember what that song is called. Okay, we can trade Jingle Bells. I can agree with that one. It's just
Jingle Bells is actually originally a Thanksgiving song, I found out. It was originally supposed to be about Thanksgiving, and then became the most overused Christmas song ever.
That Trans-Siberian Orchestra song is called Christmas Canon.
Okay, thank you.
I thought it was Christmas in Sarajevo. Oh.
Wait. I've got to change my answer. I'm trading Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Oh, okay. Bold move.
No, I don't think that's bold at all. I don't think anyone likes that song at this point.
I do.
Why?
I like old Christmas songs.
What? She makes like $3.3 million a year from the royalties on that song.
Yeah.
It must be nice.
Yeah, if I could switch bank accounts with Mariah Carey, I think I would do so. I think there's a net gain.
Slight. Yeah. And the podcasting business is extremely lucrative, you know.
That is very true. All right, well, we are 30-something episodes into From Complex to Queens now. And even before that, when this show was just kind of a segment tacked on to the beginning, middle, end, whatever, of regular Mason Avenue audio, it just kind of dawned on me not that long ago that at no point whatsoever did any of us introduce ourselves to our listeners, to the people that actually go onto the site, our readers. So given that, you know, this is a kind of light week between, you know, Christmas and New Year's next year, I figure now is as good a time as any, I guess, to introduce who we are, why people should care about what we have to say, things of that nature. So would any of you like to go first, or should I?
You see, I mean, you're the host. Shouldn't you go first? That seems... All right.
Well, just in the spirit of Christmas here, I was just trying to be polite. But, so my name, obviously, Steve Saipa. I've been a Mets fan, obviously, my whole life. My earliest Mets memory is being at a game sometime in, like, I guess, 94, 95. I'm assuming it was my first game, but it's at least the first one that I could remember. And my dad had seats, like, you know, on the field level. So as a kid, that's like, you know, coming out of the tunnels and seeing the field and you're so close. It's like one of those kinds of things that you just remember forever. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember much about the game. And it's kind of annoying because it's, I can't even go back to, like, Baseball Reference and look at the game logs or anything and figure out what exact game it was. But all I remember is that a Gaudreau Alfonso had either a double, an RBI double, or a home run. And just, like, getting real hyped because, you know, I was a little kid. Your team just scored a run, you get hyped. And, so... To the 1999, 2000s is a good time. You guys are probably a little too young to kind of...
That's kind of how I started with baseball. That's the first season I really remember.
Yeah, those are good years.
2000, that is.
The ending, obviously, was not optimal. No. And let's see. Then in the early 2000s, I kind of... stopped following baseball as closely. One random weird thing, I guess, the game, the 9/11 game where Mike Piazza hit the home run and everything. Mm-hmm. I did not know for months, I guess, that the Mets actually won that game. I was living my life for a very long time thinking they lost. I remember exactly where I was. There's a bar restaurant kind of place on Staten Island. It's called the Elm Park Inn. I was there. We were with a couple of my parents, a couple of friends, whoever, and we were watching the game. And by the time we were seated, left with the place where the TVs were, the Mets were still losing. I assumed that they lost. I didn't, you know, I was 12 or 13 at that point, so it's not like I regularly got the newspaper. I didn't listen to sports radio, nothing like that religiously. The internet was still kind of primitive, and it's not like I checked the internet. I don't think I had the internet, actually.
Did the internet even exist?
Yeah, but I had no idea until... It still is kind of weird. Every time I see the highlights of him hitting the home run, the Mets winning, it's still kind of weird to me because deep down, it's still kind of imprinted in my brain that the Mets lost that game. Mm. So... But obviously then they got good again and I started following, I guess it was 2005 when SNY, you know, came into being and you could see every single game, every single night and day and everything. So that's, I guess, when I became a pretty hardcore fan.
So what you're saying is you have the Will Ponce to thank for your fandom.
I guess. See, that's an interesting way of putting it. That requires a lot of self-respect, retrospection. but yeah, so I remember for a while I had like an account on like Mets.com or whatever. And I would like comment on that and talk with the people on there. And then... at some point, I want to say it was 2008 or 2009 offseason. And I remember just being on Yahoo, and there was an article from Amazing Avenue that had been, you know, reposted onto the Yahoo Sports section because it used to be like that. I think it's still, that still happens. And it was a story that somebody wrote about how the Mets should sign Jeremy Guthrie, and that it would be a good idea.
Jeremy Guthrie, that's a name. Guthrie. That's didn't he wind up signing with the Orioles instead?
Yeah, I don't know if he was an Oriole at that point, or if he's, but he did spend a considerable amount of time at the Orioles. Yes.
No, he went to the Royals. Right. Okay. Jeremy Guthrie, dude, damn.
And blast, I just remember. Past. Yeah, I remember reading the article and being like, just no. That is a terrible idea.
You'd be correct. Right, Jeremy Guthrie, career K9 of 5.3.
Right. I remember saying to myself, I mean, this is also before I kind of started learning about sabermetrics and everything. But my main thing was, like, for the year, the prior year, he had, like, a 5.50 ERA. And I think it was over, like, 200 innings or so. So that was a prolonged period of suckitude. And I don't remember why I was so incensed, but I felt like I had to just tell whoever the author was that this idea of theirs was a terrible idea. So I signed up for Amazing Avenue. I logged my displeasure and I stuck around. And from there, I learned all about sabermetric stuff. And eventually, I guess 2011... 2012, somewhere, one of those 2 years, they put out a, you know, a call for authors. I applied. Eric Simon was in charge of the site at the time.
The robot. He said,
yes, he does exist for anybody that questions that. He is a real person. I've met twice, actually. I was going to be like a morning news guy. And I think, I don't remember why, but Eric said, I guess because I had a couple of fan posts in the past about Japanese baseball, which I was into at the time. And he said, oh, you know, you're good at like kind of constructing articles instead of just kind of collecting, you know, bulletins for news briefings. So why don't you go join the minor league team? I said, okay, sure. I knew nothing about the minor leagues. It was fun, and I've learned a ton from Rob Castellano, who was in charge at the time, and then obviously Jeffrey Paternostro, and here I am, and it's been fun, and I can honestly say that I definitely do appreciate minor league baseball and just the minor league system, you know, landscape, I guess, as a whole, more so than just going to like major league games and following the actual Mets. I guess if the Mets were better and their future was less hazy as it is now, that might be a bit different. But I can honestly say that I've turned down to go to like big league games because I just didn't, you know, wasn't interested. But I'll go to a Cyclones game in extremely inclement weather and sit there and get rained on for like 45 minutes.
No,
as
no.
Ken can attest to.
Can confirm, yes.
Yeah.
Now let me ask this. How many times, how many iterations of Jeff saying your name incorrectly did it take before you felt you learned things about the minor leagues from his podcast?
Quite a few.
For those of you who aren't familiar, how did Jeff used to say your name on like literally every Amazing Avenue audio?
I was Steve Sippa. He's not the only person to say that. That is the most common mispronunciation of my name.
This is going on for years.
I still mispronounce your name because of that.
I thought it was Sippa too.
Just from hearing it for like literally years.
I'm just one of those kinds of people though. Like if you mispronounce, I'm so used to it. Just like, eh, whatever. It's fine.
Not worth the effort to correct you.
And I don't remember when the transition from incorrect to correct began. I don't think I actually ever said anything. I think it actually might have been like when Jeffrey left and I started doing just kind of like the minor league updates.
I honestly think you might be correct.
Yeah.
I totally remember this conversation happening in the Slack. Like, have I been Jeff saying, like, I pronounced your name wrong all these years? Like, what?
And then I remember one of the commenters left a comment saying, like, wow, I can't believe that he's been saying it wrong the whole time. That reminds me of what the hell is his name? He is a coach now in the Met system, and he was with the Giants. And they were mispronouncing his name basically his entire career.
Their new bench coach?
No. He was, let's see.
You mean Sir Hensley Mullins?
No. Let me look it up.
Good hire, by the way. I don't think we ever talked about that.
Yeah, could not be happier about it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I can't find it. I don't want to take up too much time here. I want to say his name is Jerome Williams. Was that it?
I could not tell you. You're stumping me at the moment.
Mm. But let's see. I mean, here's his Wikipedia page here. Oh, wow. He's been to a lot of teams. Well, basically, he was incorrectly called, yeah, I think it was Jerome Williams. And whoever his first coach was mistakenly called him Jeremy. And being a rookie, he did not want to correct a veteran. And for years and years and years, everybody called him Jeremy when in fact his name was actually Jerome. And he just never said anything.
That's great. I'm tempted. I do want to loop back way back to the start of this conversation and just give us all a chance to remember that time Jeremy Guthrie made a start for the Nationals in 2017.
Did he really? Wow.
He made a start for the Nationals in 2017. He recorded two outs. He walked four batters, didn't strike out anyone, and gave up 10 runs.
That sounds about right.
Jeremy Guthrie, everyone.
Yes, here we go. It was Jerome Williams. Quote, unquote. Here we go. When I was in minor league camp, I went over to big league camp to play in a game. And I think it was Felix Rodriguez. He called me Jeremy. And that was it. I was a rookie and I didn't want to tell anybody because I was scared.
It's a little concerning.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe, I don't know. I don't think I was scared of Jeff. He's not a particularly scary person. I don't think he would try to be a scary person, but like I said, it's just one of those things that has always been, and when people mispronounce my name, I'm just like, all right, whatever.
Hmm. Well, I'm glad I launched us off on that aside.
But, yeah, so that is me in a nutshell, and I've had lots of fun, you know, being the head dude in charge for all the minor league stuff over the last couple of years, and you know, hopefully another couple of years.
And then you can go work for a major league team, you know. That's the dream.
Yeah. I don't think my brother's just like, man, you should apply for all these Major League Baseball openings and things like that. All the stuff that you've done with the website and your podcasting. I'm like, dude, that's not how it works.
It's not how any of this works.
No, it's not how any of this works. It's a hobby, a fun hobby, and nothing more.
Steve, do you have a favorite prospect from your years covering? Either somebody who, like, you liked for whatever reason, or somebody you felt you were higher on than the rest of...
Oh, so he's, I think I'm his only Twitter follower left. Juan Urbina, of course.
Ah, that's a good one.
I think when I first started doing all of the first started getting into Mets minor league stuff, he was like still very young, left-hander with some promise. And he, I think, was the first guy that fit the mold of, you know, very talented but projectable young left-hander who comes from, you know, a bloodline. But, you know, his career may go in many different directions. And obviously his career kind of flatlined. But I was, I guess, irrationally excited about him. And for whatever reason, you know, every so often when I clear my Twitter followers and people I'm following, whatever, and I see him and I'm just like, nah, I can't do it. Even though I don't think he tweets nothing of any relevance ever, but I just can't cut the cord.
It's that relationship you just can't quit.
Yeah, yeah. Good luck to him, whatever he's doing. All right, well, enough about me. How about you guys?
Ken, which one of us has been here longer?
Definitely you.
Really?
Yeah, I started in 2018, I think.
Oh, geez. Okay, yeah, then definitely me. I think I started 2016, 17. All right, anyway. All right, what's my shtick exactly? I was not really too aware of the Mets in 2000. Like, I'm sure I watched the games with my dad, but I don't really remember them so much. I have like a couple scattered moments in my head of like Mike Piazza doing something or other. I have one memory of like someone hit a 3-run home run, and then Mo Vaughn hit a solo home run right after that. That's like one of my few baseball memories from that era.
Hell yeah.
Mo Vaughn, that's a real retro one. But the first season I really paid attention was 2006. My first real distinct memory is I think that like I have a couple things that might be from the actual season, but my first real distinct memory is that crazy double play at home plate in the NLDS against the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Where you had the Sean Green to Jose Valentin to Paul LaDuca to get is it Andre Ethier and someone else at the plate? I might be wrong. That might be too early for Ethier. I don't remember who was out at the plate, but they tagged two people out at the plate. It was like, what the hell is going on here? So that's my first distinct memory, really. And then, of course, I remember most of the series against the Cardinals. I remember, like, running around my kitchen after Andy made the catch in game 7, convinced they were going to win that game. And then just kind of staring dumbfounded at the TV as Aaron Heilman blew it. Fuck Aaron Heilman, man. Fucking yeah, Aaron Heilman. So that was the point at which I got into baseball in general. And then I, as the natural competitor that I am to a fault, got into fantasy baseball, which led me to, I don't know, so I'm pretty sure these are now gone, but I started out on the old MLB Trade Rumors forums way back when, just like poking around for fantasy advice and then gradually talking about baseball. Actually, one of my friends from those forums, he and I run a dynasty league now, so I still talk to some people from back then. But I distinctly remember there was some person who was a troll in retrospect for sure, but I don't think the idea of a troll really existed in my head yet, who was out there proposing trades like, I think it was something like Nick Johnson for Ubaldo Jimenez back when Jimenez was good and Nick Johnson was on the Yankees. He was like, yeah, the Rockies need a back to first baseman and the Mets need, and the Yankees need an ace. This makes sense. So that's what started me on the path of like wanting to understand how to evaluate players, and it led me to sabermetrics. And eventually that forum community died down, and I'm almost ashamed to admit it, but the first place I went was Metsmerized. I was a pretty avid Metsmerized reader back in the day. I think I even had like their equivalent of a fan post or fan shot, whatever, way back when, with like an off season plan for signing Jose Abreu and who else did I want? I don't even remember. It was a mess. But the reactions to that post were so like loony that I wound up at a Mason Avenue instead. just like trying to argue with people in the comments was like, I can't, I can't deal with this. I can't do it. So I made my way over to Amazing Avenue, and I did at some point I made a fan post. I think this was 2014. So coming out of the tail end of that rebuild, Mets are starting to think about like getting better. And I wrote this really long, like 2000 page fan post talking about why the Mets shouldn't trade for Troy Tulowitzki. And I will say I was totally right. I'm glad they did not trade. Like, I think the example I used was that like that Troy Tulowitzki was not worth Brandon Nimmo and Noah Syndergaard. And I was 100% right. So thank you very much. Good job, past me. And I wrote that post, and Eric actually reached out to me afterwards and was like, that was a good post. Do you want to do a couple like trial pieces to see if he could write for us? And then I did. And somehow I didn't make a total fool of myself. And several years later, here I am. I think that was the summer of 2017 because I was going into undergrad at the time. Does that sound right? No. That was when I was finishing undergrad. So that must have been 2014. Sorry. The years are all it's all a mush in my head. So that was 2014. And then I'd always just read a lot about the minor leagues. I don't claim to be a scout. I certainly don't know how to evaluate prospects by eye, but I always found it interesting, especially as my like scientific career moved through machine learning and statistics, to think about the statistical side of prospects and how you could evaluate them mathematically and all the flaws associated with that process, how you could make it better. So that's where my heart still is. And I definitely understand that the numbers are always flawed and or meaningless depending on context, but I still care about them a lot. But I've just read a lot since then, like as much as I could. I've watched whatever I can. And I think that gives me some ability to reasonably evaluate things. Of course, then I misevaluate certain pitching prospects and get angry tweets from their brothers on in the middle of the season. So, you know, maybe I really don't know what I'm doing after all.
Lucas, we all have a type here. Your type is not Anthony K.
Yeah, my type is not low strikeout, injury-prone college pitchers, you know? Of course, then he turned out to be none of those. So, not two of those things, I guess, but... Oops.
Hey, it happens.
Yeah, that was a big miss on my part.
I remember being a big Jace Boyd defender back in the day, so.
Jace Boyd!
We all have hit and misses.
Uh-huh. I'm trying to think of who I would have, I was really high on at one point.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
No, I was always lower on F-Mart than everyone else. For no good reason. I won't even claim credit for that. That was just pure dumb luck.
You just get vibes sometimes.
Yeah, I was just like not a fan.
Anybody you were like really crazy about that turned out to be good?
I'm thinking about it. I was big on the Lucas Duda type train. Like I was really into Duda. Even when Ike was good, I thought Duda was going to be really special just because I could look at his major league stats. It's like, He's like one of the, I think when Duda was coming up, we still weren't at the point where everyone accepted Sabre so readily. So people would definitely argue that Lucas Duda wasn't good, even though he had like a 400 on base percentage or whatever. So I was really big into Lucas Duda. And then in terms of guys that didn't work out, I'm sure there's plenty. Like I loved Henry Mejia. He was not the best.
You can always say it, that's, you know, Mejia is very complicated and there's a lot of factors that play into why he did not work out.
I'm sure there's more. It's always harder to remember your misses, honestly. Like, there's a serious confirmation bias, survivorship bias, one of those biases. I don't know. Let's see if I can find like a top 10 I participated in from like 2016. Did I participate in this one? I don't know if I did.
I just know that I like whenever I have to go back and reference, like if I'm writing up something and I'll say like, you know, this guy was rated our X number prospect in this year. And I go back and look at the lists and I kind of just scan everybody's. Every time I see that, like I placed a player the same ranking as Jeffrey, I'm just like, yes.
Nice. Because
obviously he is, you know, he's a font of knowledge.
Well, I'm looking at my 2016 top 25, and it's not good. Oh, God, this is terrible. So I was very high on Wilmer Becerra, but he got hurt, so yeah. I thought Akil Morris and Dario Alvarez were actually good, and spoiler alert, they were not actually good.
I liked Morris.
He had that one outing in Toronto and just got destroyed.
Yeah, that was the end of that.
Eudor Garcia? I don't even remember who that is.
Oh, I loved Eudor Garcia. He was a third baseman.
Yeah, that much I remember. He got busted.
He got released for like crazy.
He got busted for HGH a couple, whatever it was.
You had him tense.
Yes, he was a third baseman, kind of bad bodied, like similar to Wilmer Flores, kind of bad bodied. He had a good season that year. I remember the exact rationale was that his numbers in, I guess it was 90 games, or, you know, it was a little bit less than an entire season, but his numbers were either on par or would have exceeded if you, you know, extended it a couple of more games. Wilmer Becerra's numbers, who obviously was very hyped at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Garcia was a third round draft pick. He was a good bat, and really it was just the bad body and the kind of questions as to whether or not he'd be able to stick at third that kind of got people to overlook him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, like months later, he got busted for HGH or steroids, whatever, and only played in like 20 games the next year, and he was bad, and then he got released, and that was the end of that. But that's Eudor Garcia. Yeah.
I had him, you had him 10th, I had him 20th, and Jeff had him 24th. We should have listened to Jeff.
Yep.
You had Gavin Cecchini second, and I had him third. God damn it.
I feel like a lot of people missed on Cheech.
Yeah. I was never a fan of that profile. I don't know why I rated him that high.
I was severely disappointed when they drafted him.
It's just a terrible use of a first round pick.
I didn't understand what they saw in him at all.
I don't think they did either. Like, people always wanted to relitigate Brandon Nimmo versus Jose Fernandez, and it was like, okay, no, I get why you liked Brandon Nimmo. Like
there was legitimate upside there. He didn't reach a lot of it, but still ended up very good.
Yeah, like there was
like a borderline six.
You can argue that like his center field defense never really progressed, but I think everything else, I mean, the hitting, he's a fair hitter.
I don't want to like base too much off last season, but the dude's been a straight up elite hitter when healthy.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the hitting, whatever the average is, it gets augmented by the OBP.
Mm-hmm.
The power, you know, I mean, he's not a 20-20 guy like, you know, kind of thought he might be at the time earlier in his career, but enough to keep his, you know, to keep him in the lineup, and that's all you need.
And he's really like an outlier when it comes to on-base percentage.
His eye might be an 8. 7.
Yeah, no, like I'll never forget. I went to a game with my cousin when in 2018 when he first got his first like big run.
Mm-hmm.
I remember turning to him and saying, "I don't know if he's gonna hit enough, but this guy takes a hell of an AB."
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
it's Joey Votto-esque. Not that Brandon Nimmo's Joey Votto, but his approach is that in that echelon. My point being that Brandon Nimmo, at least there was upside there, and who knows, maybe if he doesn't have the 50 leg injury, the center field defense will still be there. Gavin Cecchini just made no sense. A low ceiling middle infielder with no power or body projection.
Yeah, they bet heavily that he was going to be a shortstop, and surprise, he really didn't make it to double this one.
No.
Well, he just got his free agency this offseason, and I doubt he's back. I doubt if he even gets signed. Who knows?
Yeah.
He is young, though, so.
He might end up in like being like a Korean League legend, a KBL.
I could see it.
I hope he does. That would be good for him and good for us entertainment wise, I guess.
So that leaves us with you, Ken. I really hadn't realized that I'd been here that long. That makes me feel old, honestly.
Yep. Well, let's take a break here, and you'll get a couple of seconds older as we break for this commercial.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Hi, this is Kara Swisher, host of Recode Decode. It's been an incredible 2019 for our show, and we've recently been honored with some awards by Adweek. They named Recode Decode the best technology podcast of the year and the podcast of 2019 overall. So if you haven't checked us out yet, there's never been a better time to start. On Recode Decode, I interview people you need to know in tech and beyond about power, change, and big ideas. Some of my guests in 2019 have included Edward Snowden, Nancy Pelosi, Ronan Farrow, Megan Rapinoe, and Kathy Griffin. You can find some of our favorite episodes at Vox.com/decode. That's Recode Decode, an award-winning podcast that you should check out today. Thanks and happy holidays.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined by Lucas and Ken. And Ken was now going to our, not junior member, but our youngest member. He's going to just talk a little bit about himself here.
Steve, I think we may have lost Ken. Oh, nope, he's back.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm back. Sorry, you guys went silent for a minute.
That would have been a terrible time.
Uh-huh. So I assume you just introduced me.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So I've been a Mets fan. Really, the first season I really remember was 2000. Mike Piazza was like the biggest deal, my childhood hero. I had like the jersey. I had like a Piazza hat when I was like 8 or 9. He was like the coolest thing.
Did you have a jersey or a jersey?
I believe I had both.
Oh, nice.
I was like a fanatic.
Did you have those yeah, the sick black uniforms?
They were black, yes.
Excellent.
Yeah, I still love that aesthetic. Uh-huh. I'm glad they don't really wear the jerseys as much, but I do miss the hats. The hats were pretty
black. Are good. I think I had a Jose Reyes black one way back when. Anyway, sorry, go on.
I didn't really follow the team super closely. On like an everyday basis until like 2006, I'd like watch games with my dad and stuff and went to a lot of games just with the family. But I kind of became like a fanatic in 2006. The playoffs really kind of cemented that. And then, stayed with me all through college. And then in college, that's kind of when I started to get into the minor leagues a little more, because the Mets were, you know, largely speaking, terrible from like 2010 to like 2014. Mm-hmm. And the system got really interesting. So it became kind of cool to be like, yeah, they're bad now, but there's some hope below the major league level. And
I miss that feeling.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get there, I feel like.
Eventually. There,
it's not the last we've seen of like the good minor league system for the Mets. But, and then I found the site, I think, in, like, 2014. I think from prospect stuff, I got, like, really frustrated with wherever I was. I think it might have just been, like, Prospect Pipeline or something at Baseball America and stuff. And I found Amazing Avenue through that being, like a team-specific source. And then really learned a lot from reading Jeff and you and Steve and Rob and Greg Karam
Oh, Greg. I forgot Greg.
2014 or so through, you know, when I signed up for the site in 2018. I think I was a lurker until 2015, and then I was fairly regular in the comments from 2015 to 2018 when I, you know, messaged Chris McShane seeing if I could join the staff. Really the big thing for me with the minor leagues was I got a login for MILB.tv. And once it became you know, a little more real than just, you know, looking at box scores and stuff where I could add context to things, I really, really got into it, where like I was watching the Binghamton Rumble Ponies pretty much like every day at work, just in the background while I was working on like drawings and stuff. And I feel like I really got into the system just from watching video, like crazy amounts of video.
Yeah, the MILB TV is definitely a game changer.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if every stadium would just get it and also get a camera angle that wasn't like from third base. But
we're pretty spoiled now, though.
We are.
Binghamton has a decent feed. I have my issues with them, but they have the center field camera now. Columbia's
one of the best. Good.
Syracuse is all right.
You occasionally see videos on Twitter from, like, I don't know what stadium, like, random ass other teams.
I maintain Hartford has, like, a legitimate, like, big league caliber broadcast.
Really? Okay.
It's like, perfectly centered.
Oh, that's nice. I mean, hell, that's better than a lot of major league broadcasts, then. There's some real bad ones.
I remember thinking, like, Justin Dunn had, like, the game of his life because their camera angle is so perfect that you could see the movement on everything. Absolutely. Spoiler alert, he was not.
Yeah, why don't we sit down and relitigate how good Justin Dunn is whether the Edwin Diaz trade is worth it.
I have no interest in ever doing that again. Justin Dunn, I wish him well, but he's dead to me as a prospect. Like,
Ooh.
I'm so tired of talking about Justin Dunn.
That's pretty good in Double A last year.
He's fine.
If you don't want to talk about Justin Dunn, have we talk about Jared Kalanick?
Oh, God.
Oh.
Jared Kalanick's at least, like, interesting as a prospect.
He is.
He's very good.
Yes. I have him in, like, three Dynasty Leagues. I'm holding on tightly.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So who is your guy that you just kind of can't let go of?
Let's see. Who did I think was, like, really good? The first one was Cesar Pulo. That was the first year or one of the early years I was following it was the year he just went, like, apeshit in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, like, 2013 or something.
13, I think it was,
when he got suspended for PEDs. I remember thinking, like, if he got a shot in the big leagues, man, this guy's going to hit. And again, spoiler alert, he did not hit.
Make it, though, and he's bouncing around. So
he did. And then on the other side, you know, I've spoken at length on this podcast and in other forums about how Michael Conforto was, like, the perfect prospect in my point of view.
Every team has a Michael Conforto, Ken.
I refuse to agree with that.
Yeah, it's because it's objectively wrong.
I remember, like, seeing him, 2014 was maybe, like, the first year I followed the draft, like, before it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just thinking, okay, yeah, this guy's going to hit.
Dude rakes.
Yep.
I'm a big dumb idiot who liked Bradley Zimmer more. Mock me.
No, I mean, please. No. It's just like I remember seeing him in Double A in 2015, or, like, following him relatively closely in Double A in 2015. I don't know if I actually saw him or not. But, like, thinking, like, okay, the rest of the industry is, like, low on this guy for not good reasons.
Mm-hmm. I think they were, like, bitching about his defense or whatever. His defense, how much? I don't understand.
Turned out to be very good. Like,
not even like he had a bad body or anything. It's like, this guy is totally going to be fine in a corner. What are you talking about?
I'm convinced that people, like, look for things on certain profiles. Like, just look for things to knock players on.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird because I remember writing, like, back in the day when I really did a when I had less responsibility, and I really did in-depth like profiles about the guys that might be drafted. And I remember, you know, I go to a bazillion different sources, and what I wrote is just kind of an amalgamation of everything. And I remember writing, like, you know, Conforto's defense, he's not a plus defender, but, you know, he's more or less like a net neutral defender. Like, he's not going to burn you, but, you know, you're not going to get really too much out of him. He's fine, and it is what it is. And, you know, that's from a bunch of different sources. And I don't know where the idea that he's a terrible defender like came from, because he never was. You know, I don't know if it kind of, you know, net neutral defender kind of morphed into a negative defender, but I don't know.
That dude is like a slightly above average corner outfielder who can, in a pinch, fake it in center.
Yep.
Of course, on the Mets, that means he plays up too much center, but it's the Mets, so.
Yeah, I remember thinking, I have no idea why this guy isn't like a top 20 prospect in baseball by like halfway through 2015.
I never got why people loved Kyle Schwarber and didn't like Michael Conforto.
I like actively don't like Kyle Schwarber because of that.
That was like a serious debate in 2015.
Yeah, I believe I was like team Schwarber.
He was going to hit something like 50 home runs a year, and it turned out that was not realistic at all.
Turns out he just can't hit lefties at all, and also can't hit for average, and unshockingly isn't a catcher
or an outfielder.
He's actually a decent outfielder, I think.
Is he? I thought he was a terrible outfielder. I don't know.
He's like one of those guys who bucket based metrics like, because they don't account for positioning.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
The Cubs happen to be very good at positioning, or historically have been very good at positioning.
You're telling me that smart teams are smart, Ken?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'd go ahead calling the Cubs.
Analytically, I wouldn't even call them cutting edge anymore, but analytically, modern teams are better with things like positioning. I'm shocked.
Yep.
The Mets are behind the curve?
Yeah. The ultimate example of this type of thing is Pete Alonso, by the way. People, you know, looking for reasons not to buy into a prospect.
I mean, having seen Pete Alonso, like, his defense was kind of bad.
No, yeah, it was bad, but, like, also the guy hits 900-foot home runs.
Oh, yeah.
Fairly regularly. Like...
Now, we always got reports on Pete that, like, a ball in the air, he literally couldn't do anything about it. I don't think we saw him struggle with a pop-up at all.
How often does that actually happen, though?
Does a guy
make it to the big leagues because of his bat, and it turns out he just can't catch things?
That
ever happened?
Dan Vogelbach.
Daniel Murphy.
Daniel Murphy at left field.
Daniel Murphy would have been fine at first base.
He was fine at second base for a while.
I'm pretty sure he was the starting first baseman for a while.
Yeah. Oh, was that opening day 2012 when he dropped that ball in Miami with Johan on the mound? Oh, that was painful.
But yeah, Mets are not a smart team. It would be nice if they were.
I mean, would we still be Met fans? We all have a deep-seated center of self-loathing and unadmitted masochism if we're Met fans.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure if some enterprising graduate student wanted to do a study about kind of personality types.
That is not the kind of graduate student I am.
Well, no. I was not implying that you should. But I'm just saying that does seem like it's fertile ground for someone that, you know, is interested in sociology and is interested in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the kind of different personality types and characteristics, differentiations between Mets fans, Yankee fans, things of that nature.
The psychology of fandom must be an interesting topic.
Yeah.
And one that doesn't make us feel any better about ourselves once we get the answers. We're all big dumb idiots caring about something we can't control.
Yep. Your enjoyment hangs on the whims of billionaires that care little for you.
And literally, you are totally powerless. Eat Arby's.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Thomas was unfortunately unable to join us. So if we're able to get him on the show next week, he could introduce himself. He is our new junior member. So Ken, you've graduated, and
How are we hazing the new guy?
We're going to subject him to...
We should make him write up all of the IFA guys that we know nothing about.
I already did
that.
Damn.
I'm about 20 pages into the other guys of note.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So
the only prospect I've written up for list season is Alexander Ramirez.
Oh yeah, I should probably start on those, shouldn't I?
I mean, I'm not going to do any more until Steve tells me when he needs it.
I think an appropriate hazing for Thomas would be that he has to go back and read every single one of Rich Staff's tweets.
I think that's
can we plug Rich's Twitter real fast?
Sure. Oh,
no. Yeah, for high quality baseball analysis and breaking content, please follow at Rich Staff. 7.
Wait, his Twitter should definitely be plugging us at this point. What?
Oh, Rich is an up and comer.
Yeah, sure. All right. Well, if anyone has any questions about anything, if you would like to tell us about how we're wrong and rub our faces in all of our wrongness, you can go ahead and email us at our email address, which is fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Sipa. Sipa? Lucas is at elglahos343. Ken is at ken1191. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Rate and review it. And obviously, thank you everybody for listening. If you all did not listen, then we would just kind of be talking into a void, which is decidedly less fun.
Mm-hmm.
And list season is going to be starting. Our 2020 prospect list drops on New Year's Day, January 1st. So next week, we'll have some previews. Talk about guys who maybe just missed it. Talk about some sleepers, things of that nature. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
Happy holidays.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.